I said with an infuriatingly smug smile. Well, people pay to have that done to them because it sexually excites them, Helen added.
I am not having sex for money like a common trollop.
Of course not, Amy said calmingly. You're an uncommon trollop, she added under her breath.
I heard that, Lorelai said.
I don't care,
Amy sing-songed back.
Anyway, Helen continued, it doesn't have to be like you had with Magnus, exactly. No sexual activity. You just verbally humiliate and physically abuse. You know, whips, chains, handcuffs, kicking, needles, paddles, canes, that sort of thing.
And people pay for this. Through the fucking nose, Amy said emphatically. Through the fucking nose, Amy said emphatically.
So why don't you do that? Lorelai asked.
Not my kink, Amy said. Besides, I like museums. Love them, really. Always have.
So what's your kink? Helen asked, matching Amy's earlier sing-song. Amy flushed again.
Submissive. I love being spanked and held down
by my wrists.
She gave an involuntary shudder as chills rode down her spine. She tingled, and it wasn't just the Vicodin.
I could tie you down, Helen whispered suggestively in her ear.
Amy blushed harder.
You really need a boyfriend, she said to Helen.
Or a girlfriend, Helen teased back.
Lorelai subtly shifted her pose, and suddenly both girls were aware of the very long, slender legs revealed by the short red dress. Lorelai licked her lips slowly, and very slowly stepped into Amy's space, holding her gaze.
"Oh, a mistress," she said, running a long black nail up Amy's shoulder, neck, and under her chin. "I could tie you up. Tease you to the point of ecstasy, render you more helpless than you've ever felt, have you begging for release, if I chose."
And she kissed Amy, just a touch of lips to lips, then pulled back one slow step at a time, gaze locked with Amy the entire time, who hadn't moved, like a mouse before a snake, trembling but frozen, and Lorelai smiled smugly.
"You just have to ask," she said and laughed lightly.
The spell, an erotic rather than magic one, broke and Amy could move.
"What was that?"
Amy asked. She wanted to demand, but she was still quivering inside.
"We don't have to be enemies, Amy. We could be very good friends,"
Lorelai said, dropping her voice a register so that she purred in that sexy tone that had the reporters eating out of her hand.
"See?" Helen said. "She'd make a great dominatrix, and you could be her first client."
"Oh, I'd never charge my friend," Lorelai said, leering.
"Stop it," Amy protested.
Then her phone rang.
"It's Magnus," she said.
Chapter 15. Magnus had secured an offer from a major player in Gen Engineering and wanted Helen to come with him when they went over the documents and also to help answer any technical questions that came up. They wanted to meet right away, so Amy and Helen and Lorelai headed over to the Avenue of the Americas, a few blocks and a whole different world from the East Village. Amy, distracted by other things, had not warned Magnus of either Lorelai's new wardrobe, including underwire enhancement, nor of her internet fame. She was reminded of this when she saw Magnus's jaw drop like a stone.
"Lorelai,"
he said, just managing not to drool. Lorelai smiled. She was familiar with rendering men, and the occasional woman, speechless, but to do it with just her appearance and wardrobe? That was new. She smiled at her friends, Helen and Amy. It was a particularly blinding smile, and Amy, in particular, almost walked into a street lamp. Magnus didn't even notice his girlfriend stumble and nearly fall.
He only had eyes for the gorgeous Lorelei in her low-cut red dress and fuck-me pumps, pale skin and hair so dark it was almost purple. Lorelei, he continued, stuttering. She walked up to him and tilted his chin with one finger. He swallowed loudly. Much as she had to Amy, she held him with her eyes, her concentrated sensuality, and kissed him lightly on the lips. He didn't even kiss her back, just let her kiss him. Yes, this dimension could be fun. Less wanton bloodshed, but there were definite recompenses. She flicked him across the nose.
It's still me, silly. Just your mistress.
I love how you can say that casually, Helen remarked.
Say what?
Lorelei wanted to know.
Just your mistress, as if having some BDSM power exchange was the most normal thing in the world. Isn't it?
Lorelei asked, since owning people in a variety of ways was standard in her city.
And what is this BDSM? I know they are letters in your alphabet.
That's a long conversation, Magnus said, and one he hoped to forestall between his mistress, he was coming to accept that term, and his girlfriend. Possibly forever. So, this company is offering how much? Helen, ever the soul of pragmatism, wanted to know.
100 million for the rights and 25 million for each of the two Enki clones,
Magnus said proudly. You're being ripped off, Helen pointed out.
Of course, but I also have the two Ankylosauri who have nearly outgrown not only their cages, but the laboratory itself, so I don't have a great deal of leverage.
Leverage is where you find it, Lorelei said cryptically.
Rather than bitch about my various shortcomings, how about we focus on the fact that we're going to be millionaires? 250 split three ways is 80 million each.
Don't you mean four ways? Lorelei asked.
Since when do you care about money? Magnus asked.
Since I saw the closet where you expect me to reside, she shot back.
I didn't ask you to move in with me, he protested.
He didn't ask me either,
Amy commiserated.
We've only been back together for weeks.
Long enough for you to acquire a mistress, she shot back.
They really are in love, Helen whispered to Lorelei like a proud parent.
This is love? Lorelei asked.
Definitely, Helen answered.
Chapter 16.
Love is bickering? Lorelei asked.
Love is sexual torture? Helen responded with an arched eyebrow.
Touché,
Lorelei acknowledged.
Thanks,
Helen said as the argument wound down, and Magnus had taken Amy in his arms and held her close.
Good couples get along.
Great couples argue, Helen said as if delivering a relationship axiom.
Why is that?
Lorelei asked, because she was bored, not because she was at all jealous of Amy and Magnus sharing a kiss and a cuddle, she told herself.
Because arguing keeps the mind and the relationship fresh. You have to stay mentally engaged.
Interesting, Lorelei conceded. My partners and I were always mentally engaged in plotting to kill one another.
That also would keep the mind active, and things from getting dull.
Actually did get old, Lorelei conceded.
Are you warming up to our little dimension? Helen teased.
A little, Lorelei conceded. The clothes are nice, and the footwear is exceptional.
See? Beneath that lethal sorceress devil's acolyte exterior, you are a girl.
A woman, she corrected, emphasizing her revealing dress.
Not that Magnus notices, she muttered.
He noticed the hell out of you when you first turned up, Helen pointed out.
Not that I care, responded Lorelei, though involuntarily she smiled a bit.
She slid closer to the hugging couple and slid her arms around them both.
"Did you tell him your brilliant idea?"
she asked breathily. Magnus's lower lip trembled. Was there a threesome in the offing? Could he be that lucky?
"What brilliant idea?"
he asked with shreds of equanimity.
"Which is to be admired under the circumstances.
Who among us would do as well?"
You didn't tell him?
Lorelei pouted, her lower lip trembling as well, but hers was a calculated gesture to reduce Magnus to mush and have a more muted but nonetheless altogether interesting effect on Amy.
We were arguing, and then we weren't,
Amy tried to explain, her eyes fixated on Lorelei's lips. Amy suggested I would make a fantastic professional dominatrix, Lorelei said with a smile, as if confiding the world's best secret.
Actually, that was my brilliant idea, Helen said, not wanting to be left out, nor was she ever one to let duly earned credit pass her by. Though Amy did say she knew just the place where Lorelei could start working, and isn't that interesting? Helen, to be fair, always gave credit where it was due as well, and loved teasing Amy in her vulnerable places. Take that as you will. But perhaps irrelevant, she continued, now that we're all going to be millionaires, assuming we manage not to fuck it up in the next hour or so, and by we, I mean you, Magnus. I, of course, am perfect. Which is why it was your perfect idea that got our dimension invaded by demonic elves spearheaded by Lorelei, Magnus retorted.
I am not demonic, the demonic elf in question protested. I worship the elder gods, Cthulhu, Nyarlathotep, and Dagon, perfectly respectable deities, not demons, dedicated to the subjugation and sacrifice of all lower races to feed their monstrous, insane power, which I am able to channel in their service.
That's a mouthful,
Amy said sarcastically. She was still riding a Vicodin wave and didn't really take in the full implications of Lorelei's statement.
Speaking of, what's your real name again?
You can call me Lorelei, she said. Or Mistress.
This isn't about trying to use magic to capture you and bind you by your name. Just if the form was fake and you don't really speak our language, what is your name? Or as much as you can tell us.
My name is, in my language, pronounced Anilanthala, she said, pronouncing the syllables of her name in almost chanting fashion. And it means severity.
Severity?
You know, the way you name your children after virtues you admire and hold laudable. Charity, joy, hope. My people do as well. Names such as Pain-Giver, Ruthless, Bringer of Despair, Madness, Fury, and in my case, Severity. It's considered a very formidable name.
That's just what you want in a girl's name, Magnus said, whistling in the dark. Formidable. I've always dreamed I'd have a girlfriend with a formidable name.
Chapter 17.
You're making fun of me,
Lorelei said coldly.
A little, Magnus conceded, but also just making humor in the wake of some very frightening images. It's what we humans call whistling in the dark.
Are you afraid she's going to hurt you? That doesn't make any sense. She already told us what she has to do if she kills anyone except in self-defense in this universe, Amy said.
True. Well, true mostly. You're protected by her natural dislike of cuddling, he said to Amy. But if she kills me, then she owes restitution to Helen. He nodded at the broadly smiling redhead. That doesn't give me much comfort, knowing that while Lorelei will no doubt be pissed, Helen will be doubly satisfied at my undoubtedly painful and untimely demise, and the fact that that demise is devising sexual satisfaction upon her as reward.
That does kind of suck, Amy commiserated. I wouldn't take satisfaction at your painful demise, Helen insisted.
Anymore. Now that Amy has taken you back, I can mostly tolerate you, or at least ignore your shortcomings with my usual equanimity.
You drugged and blackmailed me, he accused.
That's my usual equanimity. Besides, we're closer now. We've rescued each other from something like fate worse than death. We're comrades in arms. I very nearly consider you a friend.
I'm sort of genuinely touched, Magnus said.
Good,
Helen said with a blinding smile. Now, let's go and become millionaires. Feeling hustled, but not sure exactly how, He allowed Helen to take his arm and lead him to the doors of the giant skyscraper. Chapter 18. Only to find their path immediately impeded by Severity. No better to think of her as Lorelei. Much more comforting. Severity was scary as hell. Lorelei was scary in a sexy kind of way, and considering what might happen if he ever failed to perform for her, it was much better to see her as sexy scary.
"I'm going with you," Lorelei said firmly.
"No, you're not," he said. "They expect to see two scientists. You don't look like a scientist. You look like a goth. A beautiful, sexy goth, but still a goth. We have to look professional, or the deal won't go through. And I'll be stuck with two dinosaurs destroying my lab and maybe the museum. And while the dinosaur rampage will cheer Amy up, it will destroy the tatters of my career. And Helen's."
"Ha! You wish!" taunted Helen, who no doubt had blackmail on every member of the museum's board.
"Fine. Just my career. And then we won't even have the closet you denigrate to stay in. And homeless in New York is no fun."
"You need your lab. That is where the device is. So you must keep your job. I have to ensure this goes well. I'm coming with you."
"Lorelei," Magnus began.
"You can come," Helen said.
"What?"
Magnus sputtered. "We know she can change her appearance with magic, so there's either the option where she comes with us and we don't know it because she's invisible, or the option where we agree she isn't pissed at us and we have an ace up our sleeve, one that we hopefully don't need, but still, better to have and not need than to be left disemboweled and waiting for slow, painful death, like my mom used to say."
"Your mom said that? Those exact words?" Magnus asked.
"Yes, why?" Helen said, seemingly genuinely surprised at the question.
"So much becomes clear," he said softly. "Fine. Lorelei, can you change your appearance to something more bland, like a personal secretary or intern?"
"Of course," the elf said. "I'll just use Amy as a template."
Amy sulked loudly.
"Just teasing, lover,"
Lorelei said, and catching her behind the neck, pulled her in for a surprise deep kiss, the surprise being that Amy couldn't help herself from returning it, at least for a few moments, before she fought her way loose of Lorelei's grip.
"Wish us luck,"
she called over her shoulder as she dragged Magnus and Helen behind her, slack-jawed in surprise. Amy stared stunned in an entirely different way, and wished them luck as she stared at Lorelei's ass, which was no longer clad in tight silk, but rather now in a sensible A-line skirt that managed still to be beguilingly tight. Chapter 19. It was hard for Amy to imagine missing Lorelei, but she wasn't thrilled about being alone. Not knowing what else to do, she headed over to the Barnes & Noble back at the East Village, so she could at least read and wait to hear from her friends, ideally with news that they were millionaires, but possibly that they were in huge trouble. Though she didn't know what she could do about it. She'd already tried riding in like the cavalry on top of an armored dinosaur, and that hadn't worked out that well. Absently, her hands roamed her pockets, and she pulled out an unfamiliar card. Although apparently she now had contacts in the press, or at least the blogosphere. "Take leverage where you find it," a wise person had once said. If only she could remember who. Chapter 20. Magnus and Helen were ushered up to the 50th floor of the skyscraper, and it was interesting to see an elevator render the normally fearless Lorelei paler than her usual self. Perhaps possible to see because the disguised self she presented had some color in her cheeks. A corporate type in early 30s with glasses and expensively styled dark hair was asking him basic questions about cloning and wanted to see DNA samples.
"Not until we sign a contract saying if the samples are valid, you agree to pay," Helen said.
Magnus glared at her, but Helen was typically undaunted. "Once they have a computer scan them, you have nothing left to bargain with," she pointed out. Magnus agreed, and under her concentrated stare, so did the corporate type.
Contracts were signed, the DNA was scanned and verified, and then two ladies in lab coats came in and began a rapid series of serious and insightful technical questions, which Magnus and Helen fielded easily and thoroughly. Lorelei was impressed. She had no idea what they were nattering on about, but from the reactions of the human females in the odd white garments, clearly they were extremely competent in their fields. Having not seen either of them at their best, it made an interesting contrast for the elf. Perhaps humans aren't entirely useless, she thought to herself. Which, for an elf raised to view herself as the apex predator, save for the elder gods she served, was a very strong concession. Eventually, the questions wound down, and the lab coats left the room, practically bowing their way out. Of course, while the cloning was well done, what they thought was so amazing was either the discovering or synthesizing of Ankylosaurus DNA, which was actually obtained by Amy under circumstances that were obviously undisclosed to the new owners of the copied DNA. The corporate type hit a few buttons on his tablet and invited Helen and Magnus to confirm receipt of their funds. And that was that, Lorelei noted in wonder. No gold, no jewels, no magic scrolls, though the tablet seemed to operate on magic, having no pen or ink that she could see. Nor even stylus and clay, as she'd heard some used for writing. Perhaps her concerns had been completely misplaced. Everything had gone smoother than even Magnus had described as best-case scenario. Then two new gentlemen in suits entered, and Lorelei realized she hadn't been mistaken at all. Chapter 21. Though they had yet to say anything, Lorelei could sense fellow warriors, and more importantly, fellow killers, in their body language, in the coldness of their eyes. She willed herself still, not giving any acknowledgement of the amped danger.
"So we'll just be leaving, then," Magnus said, somehow picking up that the arrival of the two gentlemen was off-kilter, but not sure why.
"I'm afraid not," the man with the fancy hair said.
"What's the problem? You've got the information, we have the money. Why not let this be simple? You're not criminals or death cultists, for God's sake."
This earned him a very discreet elbow in the gut from the death cultist pretending to be his personal assistant. "No," Bryce said, for that was the corporate weasel's name. "I represent a multinational corporation that's focused on the bottom line. If the two of you, well, three, I wish you hadn't brought your personal assistant here."
"You have no idea," inserted Magnus.
"But when the two of you die in a mutual suicide brought on by your feelings of selling out your creation, and your will leaves everything to a foundation for scientific development, which through a series of parent corporations leads back to us, we will recoup all the money we just transferred, plus the pittance of your actual estates, for the cost of two hitmen, which we already have on retainer, so truly for no additional expenditure. That's not the kind of financial analysis a successful corporation can ignore."
"Why pay when you can slay?" Helen put in helpfully.
"That is a very nice slogan for our extreme accounting department. I will pass it on to them. I must say you're taking this very professionally. I appreciate that. Usually it's all begging for mercy, please God no, you can't do this, it's inhuman."
"You do this a lot?" asked Magnus, interested.
"Not a lot, but more than you think. It saves a lot of loose ends, secures a very tidy profit. Recluses make a huge advance, no one to miss them when they disappear, circumstances have to be right."
"So you wouldn't just remove people if they would be noticed, such as if one of the parties was an internet viral sensation?"
"Well, obviously," Bryce said. Helen chuckled.
"What?"
Bryce demanded. "Oh, just wish I'd posted that video I did where I juggled knives on a unicycle while topless."
"That would have been good," Magnus agreed, "instead of just doing it in our bedroom."
Bryce did a double take between them. Even their personal assistant seemed unruffled. There was a difference between being professional and being flat-out weird. Something was wrong, but since those somethings were about to be dead, it didn't bear much worrying about.
"Maurice? Spag?" Take him to the basement, he said.
Is that a euphemism?
Helen asked him.
No.
Spike, a guy in a dark suit with sunglasses and an unfortunate white mohawk, said helpfully.
There literally is a basement where they inject you with a chemical. Makes it look exactly like death from a heart attack. Then we place the bodies in a fitting tableau.
Yeah, though sometimes we have some fun with the bodies beforehand, Maurice said,
who also wore a dark suit, but with long, greasy hair, implying a time as a grunge musician before becoming a hired killer. A step up financially and morally, really.
You have these guys on retainer? Do you file W-2s for them?
1099s, Bryce corrected absently.
We're independent contractors, Maurice said.
They don't want to be liable for workers' comp, Spike explained. So much potential for work-related injury when you're a hired killer.
I shot myself 3 times in training, Maurice said proudly.
He's a little slow,
Spike's state whispered. So you won't be reasonable about this? Magnus asked.
Sorry, the decision's been made. Nothing I could do, Bryce said. Like I said, I do appreciate your taking this so professionally. You understand, it's not personal.
That makes it worse somehow, Helen said.
What? Why? Bryce asked.
If someone's going to die, there should be a reason for it, not just balancing numbers on a ledger. It should be for passion, revenge, sadism, or...
A sacrifice to appease the insanity of eldritch gods who know not the qualities of compassion or mercy?
Magnus suggested.
Just so, Helen said. That is the mot juste that I was looking for.
I try and help, Magnus said.
Not in my experience, Helen shot back.
That's enough out of you two. You're freaking me out. Spike, Maurice, get them to the basement already, and if they resist, rough them up.
With pleasure, Maurice said, pulling a long Gurkha knife from a sheath behind his back. It was a long, wickedly curved knife that, while requiring a significant amount of skill, tended to discourage resistance. Which was a shame, really, as Maurice liked resistance. It gave him an excuse to do other things he really liked.
You know, I think we can't be amicable anymore, can we, Helen?
No, Magnus, I think this situation calls for severity instead, Helen said. Maurice advanced on her while Spike grabbed Magnus roughly by the arm. Magnus swung on him. He was surprisingly aggressive for a paleontologist, but his recent adventures had toughened him up. Nonetheless, Spike was a professional, raising his shoulder to take much of the force of the blow. He then delivered 2 hard punches to Magnus's ribs that knocked the wind out of him, and he collapsed to his knees.
"What's that? You actually need your personal assistant? I thought this was just a formality, just for the scientists," Lorelei said pointedly.
"I was wrong,"
he attempted to whimper, but his lungs and therefore vocal cords weren't working. But Lorelei had very good hearing. Bryce had good instincts and made for the door on hearing the byplay, but wasn't near quick enough. In what seemed like the blink of an eye, Lorelei was out of her seat and kicked Maurice soundly in the balls. He whimpered and dropped to his knees. She twisted the knife out of his suddenly nerveless fingers, saying, "Now that's a knife," as she threw it overhand and it sank into Bryce's arm just as he was trying to make a call. Blood seeped into his suit as his phone dropped from his hand and flew apart.
"You really should invest in a case," Helen said helpfully.
"Too bulky,"
Bryce wheezed weakly.
"I agree with him,"
Magnus said, getting his breath back.
"Men," Helen huffed.
Spike advanced slowly on Lorelei.
"What are you, some type of ninja?"
She looked at him blankly.
"A type of mystical assassin," Helen clarified.
"Oh, then yes,"
Lorelei said to Spike.
"She doesn't know what a ninja is?"
Spike asked.
"Where did you spend the 80s?
"Oh, Spike, you're old," Helen tittered. She was enjoying herself immensely. She walked over to Maurice and began to kick him repeatedly in the head.
"The throat is more effective. Softer tissue," Lorelei advised.
"I wanted to give him brain damage," Helen explained.
Not that anyone would notice, more's the pity.
Hey, Maurice is my partner. He may be an idiot and a former musician for Screaming Trees, but he's still my partner.
Spike knew his limitations and had seen how fast the girl moved. He pulled a gun hidden in the small of his back. Guns were discouraged for this type of wet work, but better that than the complete snafu going down at the moment. Magnus from the ground saw him reaching for the gun. He sprawled forward in a chop block, though he had no idea that was the term, and took the mercenary out at the knees. The man fell forward, the gun knocked from his fingers when he fell. Lorelei grabbed it, sensing its importance as a weapon, but not knowing how it worked. Spike kicked Magnus in the face, and blood spurted from his nose. Lurching to his feet, the mercenary grabbed for the gun. Lorelei easily dodged and elbowed him in the throat. Then she stuck a finger in his eye and pulled.
"See, this is what I was telling you about,"
she said conversationally to Helen as she pulled the gunman's eye out, but not severing the nerves.
"Now he can watch himself bleed to death," she said.
Helen lurched drunkenly to a corner of the room and vomited noisily. Magnus more practically approached Bryce and roughly pulled the knife out of his arm. "Can you get us out of here, or do we have to kill you and take our chances?"
"I can't get you out of here. Just don't kill me," Bryce said.
"He's lying," Lorelei said.
Chapter 22. "Can you be more specific?" Helen asked.
"More specific than he's lying?" Magnus asked in disbelief.
"The statement seems pretty semantically clear."
"Is he lying about being able to get us out of here or unwilling?"
"That's a little nuanced for my abilities," Lorelei said.
Bryce was relieved because of course he planned on having them killed if he could just get to his phone or anyone else in the building. Screwing up a simple removal would ruin his chances at promotion. Not that he'd done anything wrong, he justified to himself. Who knew a couple of scientists with poor social skills would bring their own ninja?
"I thought you said you could read minds," Helen said,
understanding she was being slightly ungrateful.
"I said someone in my team could read minds, not me personally."
"You implied it," Helen insisted.
"Yes, I did," Lorelei said, giving one of her best infuriating smiles.
"Bitch," Helen huffed, admiringly rather than angrily. Helen didn't like being exceeded in an area she considered one of her strengths, but was big enough to admit it in the rare case it happened.
"Thank you," Lorelei said, taking the comment in the spirit it was given.
"So how are we going to get out of here if we can't trust this asshole?" Magnus asked, cutting off the mutual admiration party.
"I think I can, what's the word you like? Incentivize him properly."
And Lorelei smiled her sexiest smile, which in context scared the hell out of Bryce, who worked with sadists on a routine basis. She had dropped her illusion during the fighting, not wanting to split her attention, and despite the blood on the floor and continuing to pour from his arm, he was still stunned as she rolled her hips towards him, bending down to whisper in his ear.
"What are you gonna do to me?" he whispered.
"Magic," she breathed in his ear. She rubbed a slow circle over the crotch of his slacks.
"Did this just get a little creepy?"
Helen asked in a stage whisper to Magnus.
"Hush,"
hushed Magnus, who was concentrating on the show.
"Are you gonna cut it off?"
Bryce whimpered, because he knew her type.
"Don't be silly," she said reassuringly. "I'm just going to shrink it."
And she whispered harsh, grating syllables in her own language. A frightened tear trickled down Bryce's cheek as Lorelei continued to rub circles, only now much smaller circles.
"What did you do?"
Bryce asked, his voice breaking.
"I told you I shrunk it. Get us out of here, and I might let you have a few inches back."
"A few inches back?" Magnus echoed in horror.
"How many did she take away?" Helen wondered aloud.
"Oh, about 5, I think. Not sure. We don't use inches where I come from," Lorelei said.
How can I trust you?
Bryce asked.
Is that really where you want to go with this conversation? Can you trust us? We're not the ones who planned a murder just to save a trifling sum.
$250 million is not a trifling sum, Bryce protested.
It is to this corporation, isn't it? Magnus demanded.
Yes,
Bryce conceded. Was this even really a directive from someone on top, or was this your own idea to get yourself a promotion? Helen demanded. Bryce winced. He was normally very good at keeping his face straight while he was lying, but he was far from his best at the moment. In several ways. As Lorelei had properly read, being an experienced sexual sadist, like many men, his confidence resided in his cock. And vice versa. Lorelei continued to rub her circles and whispered in his ear about the other things her magic could do, now that she had a connection with him as she wiped some of his blood with her finger and seductively licked it off.
I can make it fall off with a word. I can make you pee blood every day. I can give you a gigantic collection of gallstones. I can make it so you're only aroused by really ugly women.
God, no!
He cried out and began to bawl. Nothing held back, not for show, whimpering and tears streaming from his eyes. This was your decision, wasn't it? Helen wanted to know.
Yes,
he whimpered. Can you undo it? She demanded.
Sort of.
What the hell kind of answer is sort of? Do something else horrible to him, she told Lorelei.
Are you giving me orders?
Lorelei asked dangerously. Chapter 23.
Ladies, this really isn't the time for fighting amongst ourselves. We can do that later when we're millionaires. We already are millionaires. The money is in our accounts. All we have to do is get out of here alive and ensure we stay that way.
Good point, Helen conceded. Lorelei whispered a few more of the angry syllables of her native language and turned Bryce's head away from her. He promptly vomited something ebon and putrid.
That was just to get your attention. I can release your stomach acid throughout your body and burn you alive from the inside. Do you have any idea of how painful that is?
Lorelei asked sweetly and seductively.
Worse than watching yourself bleed to death? Asked Helen, who was still recovering from that particular trauma and trying to suppress the memory of what she'd seen.
I really don't know, said Lorelei, but I'm keen to find out.
I can fix this. I just have to come up with a reason. I can't say you've overpowered me and killed the guards, or they'll decide you're a threat. Just kill me themselves and go after you. Please, I don't want to die. I want to live and get my cock back to normal size and not want only ugly chicks. In that order.
I believe him, Magnus said.
Sounds sincere to me, Helen said. Douchey, but sincere.
He's not lying,
Lorelei confirmed.
What about if someone was waiting for us to contact them? Is that a reason?
No, we know about your friend Amy. Someone from our office was sent out to contact her, saying you guys would be staying overnight with us to answer questions.
If you guys do anything to Amy,
Helen and Magnus said together.
Jinx,
Helen said as they shared a look.
No,
Bryce said, eager to placate the people who held his life and manhood in their hands. In Lorelei's case, literally.
Just to contact her. I said to call her, but if she didn't answer, to talk to her personally. No improvising.
Magnus looked questioningly at Lorelei. She nodded an affirmative.
What if one of us became an internet viral sensation? Surely that would be a reason not to generate a suspicious suicide.
It's flimsy, but it would hold. I have people that can rig something up.
Which one of you wants to go viral?
Bryce asked, still eager to please.
No need, Helen said smugly, as was her wont.
Lorelei's already gone viral. She beat the crap out of a mugger earlier today and gave a press conference outside the police station. You really need to investigate more thoroughly.
We did investigate you. We just didn't update it hourly,
Bryce said, more confrontational than was wise, but he didn't like having his competency challenged. He was a professional, after all. Chapter 24.
Really? Asked Magnus, as this was the first he'd heard of it.
We wanted to show her life in New York City. We hit the highlights. Soho, East Village, St. Mark's Place, shoe shopping, getting mugged, the whole experience.
And the press conference? Magnus prompted.
There was film of her beating the crap out of a mugger. I figured better to be in control of the story. She's beautiful and badass. That's a story.
And you'll fix me after I get you out of here?
Bryce asked. He was still bleeding from his arm, but other than being increasingly lightheaded, barely noticed. He had bigger fish to fry. Or smaller, so to speak.
Will you betray us?
Lorelai asked with a sweet, sexy smile. Bryce bit his tongue and didn't say anything.
You are a little weasel who can't learn a lesson, can he? She said.
Yes, I'd betray you if I thought it was safe. I can't live knowing you can do this any time.
I have an idea, Helen said and stepped close and whispered in Lorelai's ear.
Yes, I think that might work, she said.
She sucked on the blood on her finger again and barked out a short phrase in her language.
Now, what was your name?
Brass, he answered.
She just stared at him.
Brass, ma'am,
he amended.
Is that a title of respect?
She asked Helen.
Yes, her friend confirmed.
That will do. Bryce, my pet, your cock is now linked to me. When I am happy, you will be happy. Helen, make me happy, she commanded.
Helen wisely decided not to interrupt her friend's flow over a command she wanted to obey anyway. She kissed Lorelai's neck and nibbled on her ear.
Good girl, Lorelai said.
She smiled. Bryce smiled, too. He had regained his lost inches and then some. He'd never been so engorged in his life. He completely forgot the pain in his arm, or how scary the two ladies playing with each other were in his wave of lust.
But, Lorelai continued, when I am unhappy, such as when I think of your betrayal, and Helen stops nibbling on my ear,
Helen reluctantly stopped,
then I get quite put out. And even angry. And when that happens,
she trailed off.
Bryce clasped himself as pain shot through his cock, which also shrank back to its previous reduced size.
And you don't even want to think about what happens if I should die. Need I mention this is entirely permanent? If you die, nothing happens to me. The connection, like a good relationship, is entirely unilateral. But if I die, well, let's not discuss any such unhappiness. You will get us out of here safely and do everything possible to keep me happy. I think you will find a reason to double the payment we agreed upon. I realize that may take time, but I think you are sufficiently incentivized.
Bryce nodded mutely. His priorities had been completely revamped.
Good, Lorelai said.
She nodded imperiously to Helen.
You may resume.
Helen complied eagerly. Teamwork mind-fucking bitchery was one of her turn-ons. Helen once again licked her tongue along Lorelai's long neck, nibbling when she reached the ear. She let her hands wander over the elf's incredibly soft flesh, finding their way underneath the dress, cupping her breasts and playing with her nipple. They began to kiss, softly, almost tenderly at first, then fiercely. At last, after almost a minute, they broke their kiss.
"We shall have to give that more time shortly," Lorelai said.
Helen could only nod mutely. She hadn't recovered enough to speak yet.
Now, Bryce, now that you feel intact again, you should realize how very much you have to lose.
Yes, ma'am.
Then get us out of here.
Yes, ma'am, he said.
He hadn't believed in magic before today, but now that it had him by the balls, so to speak, he was a believer. And her being a YouTuber gave him the cover he needed from his supervisors for a change in plans. Disposing of the bodies of the staff hitmen would be slightly more challenging,
but he wasn't on the fast track for promotion just because of his haircut and suit, though they, of course, helped. He had instructed the room sealed until he gave the word, so he'd have time to figure it out. If he could spin this so that he was seen to react quickly to changing circumstances, instead of being seen as waffling, he might not even slip off the fast track. But that wasn't the main thing he had to worry about. Keeping a certain psychotic sorcerer as happy as deranged psychotic sorceresses can be, that's what he had to worry about. Chapter 25. A few days later, they were in a private house at the Hamptons, rent-free, courtesy of a certain corporate executive who had swung a favor for his new dear friends.
"How come now that we're rich, we get an expensive place rent-free?" Amy asked.
"Because the system is broken," Magnus said.
"Good things come to nobility because it is their right," Lorelei argued.
"So says the worshipper of gods you admit are insane," Helen countered.
"What gods aren't? Have you seen the state of the universes? Do you think quantum physics, as Magnus has explained to me, is the product of a stable divine presence?"
"Einstein did say God does not play dice with the universe,"
Amy put in.
"Sane gods don't," Lorelei said.
"So your gods do?" Helen asked wickedly.
"I do not speculate on their gambling habits. I only serve."
"I love when you do the humble priestess bit," Helen said. Then she got up and dived into the pool, because she knew her trim, muscular body looked damn good while diving. She was enjoying wearing a bikini that cost more than her weekly food budget a few days ago, and thought it looked best slightly damp. Magnus couldn't believe his luck. Suddenly he was rich and surrounded by three beautiful girls who had figured out how to get along, or at least not try and kill each other, and each of them had expressed interest in sleeping with him and or each other. He'd gotten the two growing ankylosaurs off his hands and out of his lab. Lorelei had joined Helen in the pool, so he pulled Amy into his lap and gave her a kiss.
"I'm sorry about how crazy things have been," he told her in between kisses.
"It's okay. I'm getting to like crazy, especially when it turns out like this."
"It did turn out well. I can't believe you'd assembled an army of bloggers to retrieve us in case things went wrong."
"Well, things did go wrong."
"True, but luckily we didn't need to be rescued by the blogosphere."
"Lorelei did have to give them a really good interview, though."
"Which she enjoyed. She takes to internet fame like a natural-born aristocrat."
"Which she is."
"Is she? I'm not sure if they don't have some sort of insane meritocracy over there. You're either the best, or you're a slave, or you're dead, from what she says."
"Talking of the elf in the room," she said.
"You mean the elephant," Magnus corrected.
"Sort of. Similar, but sexier and way more dangerous."
"What about?"
"Well, we've talked and decided we can share you."
"And you're saying it's your time right now?" he said with a growing smile.
"No, actually share you. Soon as she gets done swimming laps. We can go up and get an early start, though. Some practice innings?" she said with a wink and a sly smile of her own.
"Practice makes perfect," he said.
"You mean you don't think you're already perfect?" she teased.
"I have flaws," he said with mock seriousness. "I mean, none come to mind at the moment, but I'm sure..." She shut him up with a kiss. Her slender, sexy body was pressed against him, her long red curls tickling his neck as he breathed in the fresh, clean scent of her. He knew he loved her, but sometimes he forgot how visceral that love was, how good she felt in his arms. He squeezed her tightly, pressing her hard into his body as if they could somehow become closer than flesh. He kissed her lips, her face, her neck, just loving the feel of her skin as she did the same. They forgot about going upstairs for privacy, lost in the touch of each other. Then Magnus felt an arm encircle him and another mouth on his neck.
He turned to see Lorelei had encircled both in her embrace. He looked at Ginger, whose face was still lit by tenderness and hunger.
"Are you two starting without me?" she asked.
"Just practice,"
Magnus said a little breathlessly. Her mouth on his neck was making it hard to think. Lorelei moved her mouth from his neck to Amy's. Amy's eyes closed as the dark elf priestess sucked tenderly on her neck, then mouth parted as they kissed softly. This didn't actually make it any easier to breathe for Magnus, as the kiss was beautiful and wonderfully erotic.
"You guys really are getting along better,"
he managed to say with a grin.
"I'm kinkier than I thought,"
Amy said with a matching grin that was swallowed in another kiss, this one hungrier and fiercer.
"What about me?"
Helen called as Magnus hurried up the stairs to the bedroom with the two beauties. "Don't I get anyone to play with?" Lorelei looked sexily over her shoulder.
"Since when do you need an invite? I thought you were the assertive one."
Helen watched her best friend and the very sexy priestess of a mad god sandwiching the cute little backside of her best frenemy, Magnus.
"She was teasing," she said to herself. "Had to be."
Then she remembered their kiss at the corporate death trap and certain other events that Magnus had only the dimmest recollection of.
"Wait for me, you assholes,"
she called and exited the pool forthwith. Dragon versus Dinosaur. Chapter 1. Helen was always an early riser, so she slipped out of bed, careful not to wake the dark elf priestess as she slipped down to the kitchen to make waffles. Helen marveled at the enormous kitchen, decked out in chrome and outfitted as befit a vacation home for the up-and-coming business types. The waffle maker was an example of the high-tech toys combined with breakfast products you could find in a Brookstone's catalog. She just poured in batter and hit a few buttons. She patiently waited for all of a minute before a picture-perfect waffle beeped its readiness at her. She could have brought it up to share with her two best friends and the priestess of an insane god, but she knew from experience they weren't morning people. So she popped open a good book on her tablet while she poured real maple syrup from Maine over her waffly goodness. Before she could take a bite, a loud, ragged scream came from the backyard, and a loud splash signaled something, or more likely someone, had fallen into the pool. Slowly she took a bite and savored the taste as more plaintive screams intermixed with the sounds of frantic splashing. She suspected the someone or something couldn't swim who'd fallen in the pool. She calmly took another syrupy bite as the cries grew louder and the splashing more frantic. Sighing, she slipped a bathrobe over her bikini, and with a last regretful look at her waffle, broke off a triangular wedge, dipped it in the pool of syrup, and chewed on a bite as she stepped into the backyard. A man-shaped figure in some kind of armor was beating at the water with both hands and feet in a mad effort to stay above the water. The cries were in a language she'd only heard a few times before from Lorelei, the dark elf she'd shared a bed with, when casting a particularly vicious spell on the man who'd arranged this house for them. Though man was a generous term for that murderous, backstabbing, cost-cutting corporate tool. She considered the tools at hand. There was a gaff of some sort for pulling out dead pigeons or possible drowning children, a long wooden pole with a metal hook on the end. She could pull him out with that, or not, as she wasn't sure his intentions were entirely benign. Helen felt decidedly little impulse to do any rescuing, unless it fell squarely within her self-interest, and she was okay with that. She was a very self-aware sociopath like that.
"Please help me out. If I drown, I can't take you out for pastrami sandwiches like we planned,"
resonated in her mind without passing through her ears and nerve signals first. Squinting, he did look like the psychic elf she'd made a kind of sort of date with. She extended the boat hook into the water, and he grabbed it, nearly pulling her into the pool with his surprising strength.
"I was hoping you'd dive in."
"I just ate. It's not safe for 15 minutes. I could have gotten a cramp,"
she thought back at him.
I was drowning, the Dark Elf thought emphatically. Helen raised an eyebrow in an excellent nonverbal gesture of, why would I care? The Dark Elf pulled himself out of the pool once she'd pulled him to the side. He shook himself like a dog splashing pool water on the remains of her waffle. She glared poison daggers at him.
I'll make you a new one,
he promised as he shed his waterlogged leather armor. Oh, now you can speak English.
I learned it from your mind, and I was under pressure before.
Sure, drowning in 9 feet of water.
I was wearing armor, he said.
Was being the operative term as he'd shed the protective layers and was clad only in small clothes, which is to say, something like a linen jockstrap. Oh, Helen said, and put her hand to her mouth, waffle forgotten. The mostly nude elf made for serious eye candy. Tall, lithe, and well-muscled, he looked the part of an Olympic swimmer that he clearly wasn't.
Thank you, he said.
For, she asked archly.
For saving my life, and all those lovely thoughts you're thinking about what you want to do to me.
I am not, she protested.
I can read your mind.
Fine, I am. But you haven't even taken me to dinner yet.
I thought we had said lunch.
I'm seeing you in a Speedo right now. I want to move up the timetable. He stepped forward and pulled her to him, crushing her against his chest. He pulled her head back by her fiery red hair and kissed up her neck, then took her lips with his. Helen's knees went weak, but he held her up, then lifted her up in his arms to chest level, keeping the kiss.
How's that for moving up the timetable?
A little fast, Helen replied. You can put me down.
That's not what you want.
That's as may be, but it's what I'm asking for. With a dramatic flourish, he lifted her up above his head before gently setting her down. Lorelei, Helen called out in a sing-song voice. One of your boys is here. Amy poked her head out of one of the windows. Auntie's yummy. What? Magnus yelled in the background. You get to have a mistress, I get to notice boys are yummy, Amy yelled back. That's a fair point, Helen called up. Thanks, Amy said. I'm heading down.
Then so am I, Magnus yelled. So Severity is enjoying her time here? He asked. You could ask me yourself, Entropy, but I'd advise you to worry less about myself and more about explaining your sudden and embarrassing arrival.
Embarrassing?
Amy asked. He needed to be rescued by a human, Lorelei explained.
I guess we're back to being little more than pets, Amy said.
Back to? Asked Lorelei.
I thought you'd started to like us, Amy said.
Don't you like your pets? I know you're fond of Anki.
But Anki's not human, Amy said.
And you are not elves, Lorelei concluded.
Chapter 2. Well, Entropy? Lorelei continued. Why are you here and your comrades not? And more specifically, why aren't you in our city preparing our glorious invasion?
Things didn't go quite according to plan.
No plan survives first contact with the enemy, Magnus quoted. Lorelei glared at him, which rolled off him like water off a duck's back. Magnus was used to being glared at.
True, but more so than usual. We went to a magic-rich alternate universe. That part of the plan worked. We can travel between dimensions and what Magnus has called quantum universes freely now that we are outside of our own.
So I see. Tell me something I don't already know,
Lorelei said a trifle shrilly.
That's her I'm about to kill you voice, Amy stage whispered to Helen. No, that's her I want you to think I'm about to kill you voice, Helen stage whispered back. Her actual I'm about to kill you voice sounds exactly like her normal speaking voice, much scarier.
Entropy bit his lip to keep from chuckling at the byplay. He wasn't terrified of Lorelei, or so he kept telling himself, but he was at a definite disadvantage here and didn't want to give her an excuse to kill him. Or torture him. Or remove bits and pieces that he definitely preferred remain attached.
We weren't able to penetrate the spell, he blurted out. What? Are you or your two missing companions, Cthulhu, feast upon their souls, completely incompetent? You have a reputation as one of our foremost psychics. Heat Death was a formidable wizard, and that